From the Ghost Knight Media Studios and Paranormal Underground Magazine, welcome to Paranormal Underground Radio. It's time to explore the unexplained with your hosts, Rick Hale and Karen Frazier.
It is Thursday night, and if you can hear our voices, you are exactly where you need to be. She is Karen Frazier. I am Rick Hale. This is Paranormal Underground Radio at ztalkradio.com. Welcome. Karen, welcome back. We missed you last week.
Hey, I hear you guys had a really good conversation without me, though, so I would have dominated the whole thing. You know how that goes.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We know how you roll. No, you know, it's always a good... I always like talking to, you know, Jeff and... Robin.
Yeah.
And of course JD is always cool. I like he gives that I kind of like visualize him as like Indiana Jones. I don't know why. I'd like a hero worship thing. And of course Teresa. I love talking to Teresa. She's always a voice of reason.
I know. It was like a group of my favorite people, and I was at a band parent meeting, so there you go.
You should have just skipped out on that, Karen.
And it was mandatory. The kids are packing up the car and heading to Beverly. No, they have a band trip coming up in a year to Disneyland, and so we had to be there to figure out how much this was going to cost us. You know how that is.
Yeah,
you don't yet. You will.
No, I'm sure one day I will. I can't wait until that day that the future world's greatest psychical researcher comes to me and says, "Dad, I need $2,000. We're going to Disney World on a field trip." And I'm going to tell him the same thing my dad told me. Get a job.
You know, you pay for some things. We pay for, like, music lessons, and we pay for some stuff. He'll get a job soon enough. You know, yeah. I want him to be a kid, and he's having a good time. So I've been mired in writing a book for a client. Ghostwriting, so I can't, you know, say anything other than that. And being a parent to a busy, busy, busy teenage kid, and we have another teenager who's going to be moving in with us here.
Really?
In next week, right after spring break. This boys have spring break coming up this coming week, and at the end of spring break, he'll be moving in with us. And he and his mom were at the house the other night talking about it, And I said, "So has Tanner told you about the upstairs bedroom yet? Because, of course, that's where the ghosts hang out."
Right.
And he said, "No."
That's kind of like their break room, right? That particular bedroom upstairs?
That is their break room. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, yeah, I was, you know, having a little bit of fun with Paravisions before the show. Jamie and Theo have been out of town, so... They come home tonight. Thank God, I miss them so bad. But I was having a little bit of fun with them. You know, Paravisions, they have a great show. They've had a few shakeups, but you know, I like giving Patty some well shit, being from Jersey and all, because I just love people from Jersey, Jerseylicious, Jersey Shore, the Carrot people. So great show. So Karen, who do we have tonight?
We are going to be talking to Eric Morgrit, and he is actually a producer. He's produced a couple, and I think maybe directed to a couple of films that are H.P. Lovecraft stories.
Love H.P.L.
Yeah, and he's also involved with a little gathering up in Seattle called Crypticon that's occurring in May 25th. The weekend of May 25th, and I'm actually going to be on a Ouija board panel that weekend on Sunday, so I'll be there.
You know what? I would love to be on that, because it's like, I always joke about the Ouija board. How dangerous can it be? It says Parker Brothers on it.
Right.
So, but, you know, I don't think it's so much the board as it is the intent that's behind it.
Yes, I agree.
If you're trying to call up the Dark Lord of the Sith, chances are the Dark Lord of the Sith is going to come to you. So
sure. Well, but I think that it's no different than doing an EVP session or using dowsing rods or other divination type of tools. I think that you just need to know what you're doing.
Right.
If you're because you're opening up that portal between worlds, but we do that every time we do a paranormal investigation as well. So you just need to know how to deal with that, so that you don't wind up, you know, with an incredibly haunted house or something.
See, and I think that's where the difference lies with the Ouija board. Because let's face it, a lot of people are playing with Ouija boards are they're teenagers, and it's very difficult with teenagers because, as you know, as a mother of a teenager, and I work with teenagers, they don't really so much have the emotional maturity in dealing with that kind of thing. I mean, Tanner might be different because I know Tanner is a very incredibly intelligent and sophisticated young man.
Yeah, that's right.
No, I'm quite serious. You know how?
Yeah, he's a good kid.
Yeah. But you know what? If you're on this thing and you're asking, "Oh, does Billy Hopkins, is he in love with me? Will I marry him?" You know, you never know what you're going to get out there. Just like there are bad people here in this world, there's going to be bad things and bad people in the other world. So unless you are actually a spiritual medium or you've been in this field for, you know, longer than 2004, I'm totally joking, but it's not something that you want to necessarily mess around with.
Right. Well, and the other thing is that I think that a lot of kids have some abilities that they're not yet aware of.
Yes.
And I don't think that that's a great introduction to them sometimes. You know what I mean? Yeah. So.
Yeah, you definitely don't want to get too involved with physical mediumship. And believe it or not, doing EVPs is a part of the physical mediumship, whether people want to accept that or not. It's, you know, unless you're trained and you know what you're doing, I say, you know, stay away.
Yep, there you go. I think that's a good plan. So also wanted to mention real quickly that in April, on the 14th, I believe it is, that Saturday in April, I think there's like a Friday the 13th in April and Saturday the 14th, mm-hmm. I am going to be at Haunting for Hope. If you live in Western Washington, it's a really neat little gathering. It's just that one Saturday, and it's in Silverdale, Washington, which is on the Kitsap Peninsula. A pretty little town if you haven't been there. And they take donations for, I believe they call it the fish line there, but it's like Northwest Harvest or the food banker. You know, it's called different things in different places, but that's sure. what it's for. And there's going to be some really great groups there, really great people talking, including me. I get to be talking about reincarnation, which is one of my absolute favorite. I have studied it extensively. We did a great issue. My favorite issue we ever did at Paranormal Underground Magazine was our reincarnation issue. And I'm going to be encapsulating all of my vast knowledge and research about reincarnation into a 30-minute chat. So,
well, let me ask you, how do you sure. what are your thoughts on reincarnation? Do you believe in it? Are you on the fence?
Oh, I absolutely believe in it.
Okay.
I had 3 past life regression hypnotherapy sessions. 2 of them were for the magazine to write articles about, and one of them was just because I wanted to. Because I liked the first two, so I thought, what the heck? And I'm of course a very fact based person. I'm not very trusting when it comes to a lot of these things that are sort of metaphysical in nature, I guess you could call it. And sure. so, but I was able to verify things that I saw as far as dates and clothing that matched those dates and housing that matched those dates and all sorts of them. The funniest one was the second one that I did that I actually wrote an article about for the magazine. The hypnotherapist was really good. She's somebody that I know fairly well. Her name's Rita. And she knows how to get me to find things out, and you do it through shoes and clothing. So she would say, look at your shoes. So that's what she said to me is, look at your shoes. And I looked down, and my first thought, honest to God, as I looked down my legs and at my shoes was, oh my God, I'm a puppet. Because I had on like those kind of curly toed shoes, and I had like on tights. And
did you start singing, there are no strings to hold me down?
Yeah, exactly. So yes, in one of my past lives, I'm pretty sure I was a puppet.
Oh, okay.
I actually wasn't a puppet, but you know, it was how they dressed at the time. So.
Right, right. Yeah, kind of like the old, you know, late German Lederhosen and all.
Yeah, so that was really fascinating, and I would do it again. Actually, what I really want to do, have you heard about Life Between Lives hypnotherapy? Did I lose Rick?
Yes.
Okay, well, so I'll just talk to you. So
well, I've heard about it.
Yeah, so have you read the books of Dr. Michael Newton?
I have, Yeah, and Dr. Brian Weiss, I believe.
Yeah. So that stuff is fascinating because what they do is they take people from they take them back past their birth. They either take them from by going to a place before they were born in this life, or to whatever happens after they die in the next life. Yeah. And what they've found is that they have these very consistent visions, or the people report very consistent things about life between lives.
Right.
It's fascinating. And it is. if you start to read it, it matches up with a lot of different philosophies about you know, the fact that we choose the lives that we're in, and we choose the people that are in our lives. And while we may not have one soul mate necessarily, we have soul groups that we reincarnate with time and time and time again. And that we're here for karmic lessons, not karma like you punch me, so I punch you. but karmic lessons.
Yeah, I remember hearing a great story a few years back about a little boy in India, and he started having these, you know, like flashbacks or whatever of a former life. It, you know, with Hinduism, it's very, you know, very much a tenet of their faith as well, and he actually said that he was a man in a former life who was killed with a gunshot wound to the head. Now, he had this like birthmark on his head that looked very much like a gunshot wound. And then when he was taken to this other village, he knew who this guy's family was. Everybody, never been there before.
It
was hundreds of miles away.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, there's a Lawrence C. Venom thing where, you know, she was, you know, claimed to be the, you know, she was possessed by the spirit that she was actually reincarnated from. So, yeah, I definitely think that there's something to it.
Yeah, well, I don't know if I ever told... Did I ever tell you that when Tanner was about two or... He was three, I think. And I said... All I said to him was, tell me about before I was your mom. Mm-hmm. And his face lit up. And it was like he had been waiting for a million years. I mean, even though he was only three, to ask him this question. And he said, oh, yes! And he started talking about being a doctor on a boat to Africa. I mean, I didn't prompt him at all. All I said is, tell me about before I was your mom.
Huh.
Yeah.
To give you that kind of detail is amazing. But I've also heard that children, until they're about the age of five, will actually retain some of that knowledge from a former life. So,
and he does not remember that conversation because I ask him about it, and he says, no, I remember you telling me we had that conversation, but I don't have any recollection of it.
That's because he forgot that.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Yep.
Fascinating. So we need to go to break.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. And when we come back, we're going to be talking a little horror movie, a little H.P. Lovecraft, and a little Crypticon Seattle. Sound good?
Oh, it's a nerd's paradise tonight.
Nerd's paradise. Stick around, everybody. Paranormal Underground Radio on Z-Talk Radio. We will be right back.
If you are a business owner, you are paying too much for products and services. Do not spend your hard-earned cash on items you can get on trade. UTXTrade.com was formed specifically so you can trade your products or services with other companies on the network for items like advertising, computer repair, office furniture, printing, hotel stays, and much more. For more information, please visit UTXTrade.com. That's UTXTrade.com, a proud sponsor of Paranormal League of America.
In her riveting novel, Breaking the Beyond, writer Kim Casey brings to life a supernatural tale filled with mystery, humor, and intrigue. Kim's suspenseful story focuses on Risa, a compassionate social worker who assists Owen, a young psychiatric patient. Is a 300-year-old entity speaking through Owen, or does he simply possess multiple personalities? Visit awningpublishing.ca to order your copy of Breaking the Beyond. That's A-H-N-E-E-N publishing.ca.
Hi, I'm Chad Wilson, publisher and co-founder of Paranormal Underground Magazine.
And I'm Cheryl Knight, editor-in-chief and co-founder of Paranormal Underground Magazine.
Every month, Paranormal Underground explores the unexplained with a free monthly online magazine.
We take an in-depth look at all kinds of unexplained phenomena, talk with some of the field's top experts, and share the latest news and information about the paranormal.
Visit us at ParanormalUnderground.net, where you can read the magazine online, explore our paranormal evidence galleries, watch videos, participate in discussions, or read blogs with some of our writers and editors.
We hope you'll join us. Visit ParanormalUnderground.net and explore the unexplained.
Do you want to keep up with what's going on at Paranormal Underground?
Then tweet us on Twitter at ParanormalUG.
Or follow us on Facebook at Paranormal Underground.
Meet us on MySpace, Paranormal Underground.
There's no need to be in the dark about what's going on at Paranormal Underground. Join us on your favorite social networking site today.
Hi, everyone. It's Karen Frazier at Paranormal Underground.
And I'm Rick Hale, Paranormal Underground writer.
We're here to invite you to explore the unexplained with Paranormal Underground Radio, live and on the air.
Join us every Thursday night for paranormal talk and great guests from 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern Time on ztalkradio.com.
Hi, this is Karen Frazier, author of Avalanche of Spirits, The Ghosts of Wellington, a new book from Ghost Night Media. In summer of 2009, I visited Wellington, Washington, a former railroad town in the Cascade Mountains of Washington State, where the worst avalanche disaster in the history of the United States occurred. 96 people lost their lives. What I found there changed my life forever. Before I visited Wellington, I wasn't sure that I believed in ghosts or even in the human soul. Now I know for sure that ghosts are real and that our souls go on after we die. You can read all about my experiences at Wellington in my new book, Avalanche of Spirits, The Ghosts of Wellington, which is on sale at Amazon.com. To learn more, visit avalancheofspirits.com.
Identification.
You're listening to ZTalk Radio Network. Operating frequency on ztalkradio.com. The views expressed and opinions given by the individual hosts and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of ZTalk Radio, its affiliates, or sponsors.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Paranormal Underground Radio at ztalkradio.com. We are your hosts, Karen Frazier and Rick Hale.
And Karen's dogs.
And a little bit before the show, we gave you guys a thumbnail sketch of who we're having on tonight. So, Karen, why don't you tell our lucky listeners what they've won?
What they've won tonight. Tonight, Rick, behind curtain number three. No, so our guest tonight is, his name
show
is
some
Eric.
Leg.
What?
You got to show some leg with that.
Okay, I'm sorry. That's right. So anyway, Eric Morgrid is our guest. He's co-owner of Elfter Productions, and he has directed and edited several shorts, as well as a feature film, Strange Aeons, which Chad is really excited to say is an H.P. Lovecraft story.
Yes.
So he's also the festival director and head of programming for the Maelstrom International Fantastic Film Festival, MIFF, and also for what I was talking about that I'm going to be speaking on a panel at here in May, and that is the Crypticon Seattle Horror Convention. So, Eric...
Hello.
I also noticed that you're in your picture on Paranormal Underground. You're raising a glass of wine. Are you also a wine fan?
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah.
I'm a wine editor, so.
Oh,
so
okay.
I noticed.
I
those
just
things.
Like to drink it every now and then.
I like to write about it.
That was one of the crazier things, actually. That's from a rare out of country trip for me. In Italy.
Oh, nice.
Yes,
very good.
You want to remember those little moments because, you know, I don't leave the country very often.
No, neither do I. So Crypticon is coming up. It's Memorial Day weekend.
Yes.
And how many years have you been having it now?
This will be our fifth year. And so it's jumped around a little bit, but we've got a contract now at the Hilton. So we're going to be at the SeaTac Hilton for a few years now.
Okay, very good. And this year you're doing something a little different than you've done in the past, which is why I'm involved with Crypticon. And that's that you've actually added some paranormal focus this year.
Yeah, a lot of what we like about Crypticon as a group is that it can encompass all kinds of horror or different ways of looking at the world. And so I thought, hey, why not go a little more realism, a little more questioning on what's really going out there. Mm-hmm. Especially right now in Hollywood, there's a great group of really, really good paranormal, supernatural horror films that are hitting it really well, too. So
yeah.
I thought we'd bring that in.
Yeah. You want to know what's really funny about paranormal films and horror movies and things is that when I was younger, before I started investigating the paranormal, those movies scared the bejesus out of me. And now I watch them and I'm like, eh.
You know,
the fun is lost.
I know.
It's funny because it's like my wife and I will watch like the movies or the television shows or whatever, and she will actually get up and walk away. She cannot watch these things with me because all I do is pick it apart and bag on everything. But you know what though, I think the one movie that really got a lot of things right was the original Paranormal Activity. I really enjoyed that one.
What I enjoyed in the original Paranormal Activity was actually that it had the world's coolest Ouija board in it.
Yeah.
So, hey, and speaking of, that's the panel I'm going to be doing. So, tell us, I know that we're going to be having some of the paranormal panels, like talking about evidence and paranormal authors and Ouija boards, and but tell me some of the other things that will be going on at Crypticon.
Okay, well... It's a jam-packed weekend, and there's honestly a lot of stuff going on. One of the things I think is really exciting this year is we've done a makeup contest now for a couple of years, and we've had some really good entrants, and they've received really neat trophy, which we're still going to have. But this year we've got the New Image College of Fine Arts out of Canada is offering scholarships to the winner. The first place scholarship wins $15,000 scholarship to their school.
Wow.
And second is 10, and third, fourth, and fifth are 5. So you can go in a lot.
Yeah.
So there's some, that's a lot of fun, you know, having the makeup contest. I think it's the third year for that.
Mm-hmm.
There's also a writing contest, which will get published in a nice real book.
Okay.
And then there's also, what else we got going on? This one's fun. I just found out. This is kind of new news to me, so I don't have all the details on it yet. But apparently, a couple met at Crypticon 2 or 3 years ago, and this year they're going to get married at Crypticon.
Sweet.
That is quite possibly one of the most romantic and nerdy things I've ever heard in my life. That's like getting married at Comic-Con.
Yep.
So
yep.
Who's going to officiate this wedding then? Is it going to be, and what kind of makeup are they going to be in?
That's what I'm dying to know. Like I said, I just found out about it. Somebody said this to me. I'm like going, why is this not a page on our website? It's just like, this is great. So
hopefully
to get a lot more news about that.
Yeah, that's amazing. Now, aren't you also going to have Phoenix Jones there?
Yes. Yeah, we've got Phoenix Jones. He came last year from Mom's Comics. I think they're bringing him again. And he was a big hit. He had a lot of a really good impact. A lot of people wanted to see him, so he wanted to come back again. And there's a band that's associated with him called Havoc, I believe. They'll be performing live on Saturday night, and he'll be doing a panel and signing and hanging out. He's a really neat guy. It was a lot of fun.
That's going to be a big party. So now, a lot of people may know who is, and he is like Seattle's superhero, right?
Yeah, it's part of him and the Rain City Warriors. I believe it was their team, full name.
Okay.
Did he come in costume, or not in costume? What do you call it when you're a superhero? And you wear, is it costume? Is that what you call what you wear?
Sure. He's got a uniform. I don't know if it's a uniform or costume or. And nice. I had a little trouble with Seattle police a while ago and had first one was taken away. I think he has it back now.
Okay. Oh, okay. All right. So does he have a secret identity or does everybody know who he is?
It was, but when he got arrested, they went ahead and published his photo and name, which I don't recall off the top of my head. But so he is a known commodity. He's an MMA fighter. And, very well.
They would never do that to Batman.
Exactly.
They never would. Well, you know,
Gordon in Seattle, I guess.
Well, people flock to these superhero movies and comics and everything else. But when you have one in real life, the police get a little pissy. It's kind of funny. Yep. Yeah. Go figure. Well,
vigilantism is against the law.
That's right. It sounds really cool and a lot of fun. So if people want to go to Crypticon, tell me, do they need to buy tickets in advance? Where can they go to find out about it? All of that stuff.
Well, there's the website, crypticonseattle.com, which has all the info on tickets and VIP stuff and all kinds of fun things you can do. And then you can also hit us up on Facebook, of course, which is Crypticon Seattle. And our Twitter is just
Twitter.
Active tweeting, I guess. I'm not sure there. but yeah, look, there's a general day or weekend admission, or like I said, the VIP thing, and the prices vary on that. And a little less now than if you were to walk up to the gate.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, it sounds like a really good time, and I urge anybody, you know, who lives up and down the Pacific Northwest part of the West Coast anyway to head to it, because I think it's going to be a real good time. I want to know when this couple's getting married.
Yeah, that'd be, my understanding is that it should be Saturday in the vendor room, kind of about close to the time when the vendor room is getting ready to shut down. But
I'm crushing it.
Very good. Okay, so Rick, you want to talk some H.P. Lovecraft and movies now, right?
I definitely wanted to, you know, to touch a lot on the films. I'm a huge independent film buff. I've probably worn IFC out by now, but you know, I took a minute to, you know, this afternoon to take a look at some of the films that are coming out. One of the films that really intrigues me is Wonder Boy. Okay. Now, it looks like the producer, director, whomever, the creator, took The Crow and Batman and made it really kick a lot of ass.
So it's not based on the Wonder Boy comic character? Or?
I've never heard of a Wonder... I mean, the only Wonder Boy character I've ever heard, you know, flew around with a cape and tights and all that. Yeah, but I mean, this kid's definitely far removed from all that. I like it that during the day he's a straight-A student, at night he beats some ass, you know? I mean, it just... it sounds like a really, really great film. I mean, can you tell us about some of the films that you have at the film festival? And of course, I want to talk about the films that you've done as well, especially Strange Aeons. Being an H.P. Lovecraft fan, that really excites me.
Yeah, hit the Crypticon first, you know, do the wild, because we've got, this is the first year we've actually done an official festival where we're taking submissions through Without a Box by filmmakers from around the world.
Sure.
We've also got, in addition to MIFF, we've got the Tri-City Film Festivals and the Bone Bat Comedy mm-hmm. Film Festival will all be presenting at least an hour or 2 hour blocks of the best of from each of their festivals.
Right.
So we're going to be loaded with great movies, and we've got, I think Beelzebub is coming out with a film, and the makeup contest folks are presenting one of their films because they make films up there too.
Okay.
Gravestone Entertainment out of Oregon will be showing their latest film, Innocence, at the festival as well, which is really uncomfortable film. It's not straight horror, but it's very, very uncomfortable to watch.
Very, very disturbing kind of a film.
Very much so, yeah. So we'll be featuring a lot of shorts, but then also a lot of features.
Yeah. Yeah, I saw that. I mean, they definitely look like, really great films, especially if you're into, like, you know, more the weird sci-fi or horror. Like, yeah. I love the picture of Cthulhu sitting on the toilet. How can you go wrong with that? I mean, that's the most hilarious thing I've ever seen. So
the claymation of that was actually made by Rick Tillman. Who was one of the producers on Strange Aeons. Okay. I've known him for quite a while.
So let's talk about Strange Aeons, your film. Now we've already established that it is based on a Lovecraft. What story is it exactly based on?
So The Thing on the Doorstep.
Okay. So can you tell our listeners a little bit about that?
Sure. The Thing on the Doorstep was chosen from Lovecraft because, as a reader of Lovecraft, you probably know his films are, or his writing is, lacks female characters,
yes,
most of the time. Has a no story per se. I mean, his stories are more of a "let me tell you what happened to me" recollection of events.
Right.
Thing on the Doorstep is the closest one that felt like a film, to where there's something going on. There's a progression of character and a strange movement forward, and a very strong female character who really wasn't female. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it plays as a female on screen, so that still works. And that was part of the reason we chose it. It was one of the easier ones for K.L. Young to adapt into a workable screenplay as a film.
Right. So
I love the story.
Oh yeah, I mean it's one of the better stories I think of Lovecraft, and I do like, you know, using it, because it's definitely one of the more ones that are a lot, like you said, workable to put into a screenplay. The Call of Cthulhu was pretty decent.
Yeah.
Whichever one you want to look at, the silent film or the one that was made like 15 years ago or whatever, they were both pretty good. I do have a question though, from a friend of the show. He's been on here on our show quite a bit. Jeff Grunow, he is the producer, writer, director at Blue Mountain Productions. He's got a couple questions that he wants to ask. The first one is what do you look for in a script or a storyline?
Part of the reason I started with MIFF, because I was getting a lot into this after going to the film school here in Seattle, which is a school that's all about story. There's no cameras, there's no microphones, it's all story. Okay. So that is really the key thing I look at first. Is
that the Seattle International Film School? Is that the one you're talking about?
No, it's called the Film School.
There's the Film School in Seattle,
it's taught,
huh?
Yeah, taught by John Jacobson. It's housed in the new SIFF Film Center offices in Seattle.
I ask because my son wants to go to film school, so good to know. All right.
Oh, yeah.
Carry on.
Okay. But, yeah, story's always king for me.
So we got the story is always key for you, but what exactly makes for a good project, Jeff also wanted to know.
Sure. Inventiveness. One of the arguments you hear a lot on film reviews and stuff like that is, well, the story wasn't original.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Well, you know, it's hard to have been original after the Greeks got done writing what they were writing.
Right.
when you boil the story down, story is, forgive the bias of the way I'm wording this, but you understand what I mean. It's man versus man, man versus nature, man versus self.
Mm-hmm. Right. Pretty much every Greek tragedy that was ever written.
Yeah, that's where all story builds from.
Right.
Like last year, we showed a film at MIFF called Absentia, which is about a young lady who's declaring her husband dead by absentia. And it was no budget, but it was a really good story about how she dealt with that and how was he actually really dead, or had he been kidnapped by these underground creatures? and that's why I liked it so much, because it was really no budget. And just an amazing development of this woman and her sister and the way they dealt with what was going on.
Sure.
So what do you say to, because I think that you have a lot of people out there that have a camera and a story and no budget. So what do you tell people like that?
That there's a lot of rebellion against structure in film.
Mm-hmm.
And that I don't have. I'm fine with structure in film. The thing is, once that way, at least know it, so you can throw it out if you want to.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
It's always good to read like Robert McKee's, where he talks about story. A lot of people take that and they go, well, oh, on page 4, I have to have this happen. Then on page 17, I have to. No. You just need to understand that your character needs to go through something. Even movies like Clerks or something like that, which seemingly have nothing really going on, actually have things going on.
But that's what makes that such a great story, that it's like there's just these two extremely lovable losers who really have nothing going on in their life. Yep. And yet, and it's like, I can identify with that because I'm like a hardcore Gen Xer, you know? So it's like, you can look at those two guys and be like, wow, I see a lot of myself in Dante and I see a lot of myself in Randall. That's what makes that a great movie.
It's one of my husband's all time favorite movies. Unfortunately, they felt they had to make a sequel, and you know,
oh, God, it was
so, and I actually happened to be a huge, that was a Kevin Smith film, right?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. I love his stuff. He's great. So
yes. Yep. Very, very cool. Mm-hmm. So that's when you're looking to do something different and original, just, I use that word, but if you want to do something like that, it's telling the story. Part of what happened with, I can't believe I blanked on the name of the story. The big, huge 3D movie with blue people.
Oh, Avatar.
Avatar.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean Pocahontas.
Exactly. See, that's what that movie did wrong, is it hit all the notes so hard. It's like, oh, this, what I was saying with the script, you've got to have this on this page and this on this page. It hit those notes so hard that everybody's like, oh, okay. But the best movies hit all those notes anyways. You just don't know it.
They don't, that's, right.
That's when it's really good. But otherwise, you just go, hey, generic situation, plot, dances with wolves, Pocahontas.
Yeah, completely. That's, I actually read something, somebody did an in-depth comparison of Avatar to Pocahontas. And see, but I don't think Avatar was about story. I think Avatar was about showing you something on screen that you had never seen before.
Yeah, and it was Cameron beautiful. Playing with a great new toy.
Yeah. And it was gorgeous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I mean, you know, very immersive and pretty to watch. But yeah, the story, yeah.
Yep. But, saw it in the theater, probably won't see it again.
Yeah, yes. Well, exactly. I won't. Do you think that Avatar did? Because I think that Star Wars was a movie that took movies to the next level as far as visually and effects and things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And do you think Avatar is that kind of a game changer as well?
I don't know, because part of the reason is Hollywood managed to screw things up entirely by, instead of going, okay, he shot this in 3D from the beginning to 3D.
Right.
Instead of just realizing that's what made it work, they said, hey, let's just make everything 3D in post. It doesn't matter if it's shot for it or not. It'll look bad. It won't work as well.
Yeah.
Right.
That's true.
If they demanded that the only 3D they'll put 3D on was ones that were shot with 3D cameras from beginning to end, I think it would have had a lot faster impact. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think it will eventually, but it's going to be a lot slower because everybody's so gun-shy after seeing Clash of the Titans and stuff like that. We're like, sure. That did not need 3D.
Sure.
Yeah.
So what movies do you think are game changers then?
Wow.
Definitely not Phantom Menace, I know that.
Yeah, that was kind of a game changer.
Yeah, that not the right way, though.
Yeah, Star Wars is a great Jaws. It was a great game changer. There was a lot of great, I mean, if you're talking huge budget stuff, there was a lot of great game changers that happened through the 80s with Indiana Jones and Back to the Future and these tentpole franchises that kind of moved along. Game changers, boy, I'll pull on my filmmaker nerd hat here for a moment. Sure. Citizen Kane was a game changer.
The original. Whether
you like the film or not, the way it was shot and the things that were done to it as a film just had never been done in movies before.
Sure.
Yeah.
Do you think that indie films...
Game changer be...
horror oh, go ahead.
I would say horror with The Exorcist because...
Sure.
And Silence of the Lambs because it showed that horror can win Oscars.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
That so movie think... still scares the hell out of me.
Do you think indie films can have enough power to change the game? Because I think that I know that indie films have a nice, small, dedicated audience, but they don't have the big blockbuster, widespread audience. So do you think they can be game changers as well?
Yeah. That was shown real heavily in the early 90s with Reservoir Dogs, Pulp Fiction. What was the one? Sex, Lies, and Videotape.
Slacker was good.
Slacker, yeah. Clerks. El Mariachi, whereas the first time where it was all... Roger Corman had been making those kind of movies for forever, but even he was dealing in larger budgets than these guys were talking about. $30,000 or whatever it was to get Clerks into the can. And these films went on to make not hundreds of millions of dollars, but tens of millions of dollars and launch the careers of a lot of people. There's that revolution actually is happening right now in a way that we can't see yet because it's way too new. It's way too big. But with films circling the festival market right now that were shot entirely on iPhones. And they're amazing. Some of them are amazing looking. And
really?
It's just the only reason not to make a movie right now is, I don't know, you got a 40-hour a week job and a family or something, but because the tools are all there.
Right.
I'm talking to you on a computer that I use to edit.
Yeah. Editing tools are amazing. I've done a little documentary work and I don't care about the cameras or the filming. I leave that to my techie husband, but I can sit there and edit. I use Final Cut on my Mac, and I love it. It's amazing. It's to me, I'm a writer, and to me, it's a whole new way to tell a story that I couldn't 5-10 years ago.
Yeah. And I've done short films and stuff like that for about 20 years now, probably, but I've never shot on film. I'd like, I kind of like to just because I think it'd be cool, but it's almost beyond there's almost no reason with it anymore.
Yeah. So do you have a story that you're dying to tell in film that you haven't yet?
There's one that Kelly, the guy who wrote Strange Eons, is working on right now. That's a insect-based thing.
Okay.
Not another ants, right?
Oh, no, it's more like them. Big, giant, huge, strange-looking... No, it's...
Nice, I'm down with that.
It's entirely very small, intimate story because that's what you can get a budget for.
I like the small, intimate stories.
And it's a husband and wife and what they're going through with... And yeah, hopefully that's going to get finished writing here in a little while, and I've got local producers kind of interested in looking at it, so... We'll see what goes on with that. So that would be cool.
Very cool. So, as far as filmmaking, what is your love with filmmaking? Like I was just telling you, I love editing.
Yeah. I like editing a lot too. I mean, editing's a lot of fun, especially with people who haven't done it. It doesn't happen as much as it used to, but I remember when I was first editing something, a bunch of people, I want to watch you edit. It's going to be so much fun. I'm sitting in an editing room with 15 people behind me for about 10 minutes. And they're like, okay, I'm going to do something else now. It's really fun to do, but it's really boring to watch.
Well, it's pretty tedious. If you're not in your own head, it's pretty tedious because, you know, you can take, like I did a TV thing up at Mohai in Seattle, and we film all day long for 8 minutes.
Huh.
Yeah. Hours and hours and hours.
Cut out.
Oh, sorry. I said we filmed all day long for 8 minutes of film.
So basically, it's all about the editing then. See, I don't really know too much about like the filmmaking. I think the most recent film I took was my 15-month-old throwing a ball across the room.
You could edit that. Editing is where the magic happens.
But it's so cute otherwise. I don't want to edit that.
Filmmaking is like you tell the story three times, or you write the story three times. You write it in the script. You write it when it's being shot because the actors are going to bring stuff to it you didn't think of as a director, hopefully, or your DP or somebody else. And then when it's in the edit, it gets written again because maybe you didn't get the shots you needed to tell this.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's very, very important. I also really like the planning stages. I find that bizarre.
Yeah.
Fun.
Yeah, I do.
You know, when you're choosing actors, is that a lot of fun? Or, you know, I kind of get this sense that actors can be sort of prima donnas and they're not that fun to be around. But, you know, how is that for you, choosing actors?
I love working with actors because actors are strange people.
Yeah. They are.
One of the weirdest auditions I ever had was we did a cattle call for Italian-American actors for a kind of cliched mobster role.
Okay.
And a... I believe he was Korean, Italian.
Okay.
Showed up. Korean, Italian. Really cool guy. Actually, I really like, he's like, I'm Italian. I'm like, great. You don't play Italian on TV. I would love to cast you because he was really cool and he was really good martial artist. But I was like, it's just not going to work. So you get some strange things that happen in casting, but I think it's a lot of fun just because actors are interesting people to me.
Yeah, they seem to be very sensitive to the energy that's flowing around them. And I think that's with anybody who's in a creative field.
Yeah.
I was going to say, well, I'm very creative. Does that mean are you saying that we're like oversensitive? Is that what you're saying?
No.
Is that what I hear you saying?
No, not at all. Just, you know, it's like, yeah. It's just it's tapping into, you know, something that's never existed before. You know, Mozart, for example. You know, I mean, he was able to tap into this whole different dimension of music and just create something beautiful.
Yes, you're absolutely right. So here's something I want to ask you because, of course, Rick and I are in the paranormal, and it seems like everybody in the paranormal is writing a treatment, filming a documentary, planning a television show, whatever it is. And so I don't know if that's just unique to the paranormal or if pretty much everywhere you go now, somebody's got a movie project. And is that, if that's the case, is that good or bad for the film industry, do you think?
I think in the end, it's going to be good because more, it's kind of the easiest comparison I can make it to in off my top of my photography. Photographs are taken in the ~1800s. It was a very long time. Very few people did it. And then in very place, the real talent photographers, the people that really knew how to capture an image that spoke to us in whatever way it was, you start to see that. But at the same time, everybody gets the chance to do something cool with photography that keeps things going and keeps people interested. Well, now that can be done in film. You can shoot something, and if you do something really nice, you get that amazing. There is nothing like, as a filmmaker, when we first premiered Strange Eons at the Lovecraft Festival, sitting in that crowd, totally packed theater, and it plays. There's nothing. There's no experience like that. And that, as you come out anyway, it's fantastic because you can get a lot of people to see your work. But man, that is, as a filmmaker, I encourage everybody to try to have that experience just once, where you're just showing it to a room full of people that you don't know, because film is a shared experience when it's at its best. If you're sitting alone watching a comedy, it's funny. When I saw Baba Hotep at SIFF Midnight Adrenaline a few years ago,
it was the greatest movie ever made.
It's so odd with a crowd that gets it. Yeah. It's awesome. There's nothing like it. That's why film is so amazing.
Yeah, you can tell that you're really passionate about it. That's really cool. Hey, we need to take a break. And I think what we're going to do is we're going to try and refresh our Skype connection, because I understand we're having a lot of audio problems on the listener end. And even on our end, too, I'm having trouble cutting in and out. So let's do this. Yeah. Let's go to commercial break. And when we come back, we'll hopefully have a little better audio. So we'll be right back. Paranormal Underground Radio on Z-Talk Radio. Stick around.
Your assignment is to listen to The Buzz on Monday nights from 8 to 10 p.m. Central on ztalkradio.com. This message will self-destruct.
I know what you are. You drive too fast, you smell so good, and you dress fashionably well.
Say it out loud.
You're a metrosexual?
Oh, why do I always get that? I'm a radio show host.
Kale, I want to be one of you.
And you can be. Join me on ztalkradio.com, 9 p.m. Eastern on Sunday nights. The show's called Perspective.
Hey, do you sparkle?
Oh my God, don't even start. Hang on, Spider Monkey.
Hi, I'm Joe Perry.
And Steven Tyler from Aerosmith, here for RAD, recording artists, actors, and athletes against drunk driving. Yeah, you know we love it when the music does the talking.
And you know, the music stops when someone gets killed.
So never, 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 never
let someone you know get behind the wheel if they've been drinking. So keep it real, keep it real. Friends, don't let friends drive drunk.
A public service message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
You know that you can talk to your favorite show hosts from the ZTalk Radio Network? Check out the forum and see what it's all about at ztalkradio.com.
Don't lay what you sent me down, trying to figure out how to get in my head.
You're listening to Z-Talk Radio Network.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Paranormal Underground Radio at ztalkradio.com. For the last 45 minutes or so, we've been talking to Eric Morgret, producer, writer, director, and event organizer for Crypticon Seattle. So, hey, Eric, thanks for sticking around.
Hello.
Hello.
We got our audio going a little bit better, too. And yeah. I hope you guys have been able to hear what we're talking about, because we've actually been having a different kind of conversation than we usually have here on Paranormal Underground Radio. But it's been a really good conversation, because we've been talking about film.
Yes.
Yeah. And, you know, that kind of stuff fascinates me. So there you go.
Yeah. You know, but while we're on break, Eric, I did want to, you know, touch a little bit more on the paranormal aspect that you're taking this year with Crypticon. Now, Karen and I were both, you know, longtime, lifelong psychical researchers and investigators.
Nice.
What is it that, you know, prompted you to do this? And have you had any of your own personal experiences that, you know, would make you interested in horror or ghosts or whatever?
Part of the initial reason for the Crypticon stuff was it's just like there's so much out there right now.
Sure.
With all the stuff on Discovery Channel or whatever stations running them at this particular hour of the day, that it's like, okay, let's get a little bit more into what they're actually doing. Let's see. Let's bring someone in who knows what they're talking about to say what an EMF reader is, or the gear, the concept behind why somebody would want to do something like that, or mm-hmm. what brings somebody to do something like that. So that's why we got panels about the gear that's being used, or mm-hmm. is it something you want to do yourself? This might be a way to get into doing it.
Sure.
Yeah, because a lot of people don't know how to get into it. That's true.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
And I would also think that just like independent filmmaking, watch this segue. Just like independent or combining concepts here, but just like an independent filmmaker, sometimes you're going into somebody's private home.
Yes.
And if you got some not nice person who's calling themselves a paranormal investigator, goes into a house, breaks something or does something horrible, is just a nasty person and leaves, the entire community suddenly becomes a bunch of people like that.
That's yes. absolutely right.
So yeah. It's good to have, you know, maybe if you're interested in this, come to Crypticon, talk to some of these people and go, you know, don't be a jerk. <You
know? laughs> I've actually heard some real horror stories about people who had, I'm going to say ghost hunters in quotes, come into their home and do like an investigation, and they're using swear words in front of their children and, you know, turn out all the lights and all that. And it's like, that's okay. Swearing really is not a good idea. Turning off the lights, unnecessary. But, I think that definitely that the field, you know, a field that I love that I've been, you know, involved with for 30 years now has definitely suffered over the years. And, I really just don't like a lot of the way that it's going.
Yeah.
So, you know how you said that you think that ultimately all of the people, everybody making a film or a TV show or something is good? I think a lot of people in the paranormal, long-term people like Rick, think maybe that's not the case.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yes.
That could easily become problematic very quickly. You know, yeah. If you've got a good hotspot you want to check out that's already been there by three people who don't know what, or three groups that don't know what they're doing, or are just trying to get the next TV contract,
yeah.
I'd imagine that's got to be really discouraging.
Well, it is discouraging because it's funny because a lot of I listen to these other groups and they sound exactly like everything that Ghost Hunter sounds. Now,
or Zach Bagans.
Zach Bagans. Oh my God. But, you know, and it's funny because you talk to them and they're like, oh, they really know what they're talking about. They, you know, and it's like, yeah, they know what they're talking about because of those of us who have been working in the field for a long time, who have done a lot of writing, you know, people like Hans Holzer or whatever, you know, the great psychical researcher and parapsychologist. And a lot of people don't understand that there is a history that goes back more than just 8 years, actually goes back over 130 years.
Wow. Nice.
Yeah. And yeah. And I don't think a lot of people realize that.
Were you go back to something you mentioned there, Zach Bagans, that's the ghost of Adventure.
Ghost Adventure, Zach, yeah.
Yeah.
That show, to me, is a little more like watching a comedy sketch.
It's like the Three Stooges with EMF detectors.
The whole let's be threatening and tough guy thing, I think, is an interesting take.
I yeah. think it is highly entertaining. I do. I yes. do. Now, I would like to tie horror movies and the paranormal together for a moment okay. as well. Because I think I mentioned, and I don't know if I mentioned it to you off the air or on the air, so if our listeners heard this before, sorry. Before I became and started very actively investigating the paranormal, horror movies used to scare the crap out of me.
Okay.
And afterwards, now they don't really affect me. I just watched the one with Harry Potter in it.
The Woman in Black,
something like that. Yeah. Anyway, and it just really didn't do much to me or for me. And I think it's because when you start to work in the paranormal, what you realize is that true paranormal activity is so much more subtle than what you have to do in horror film to communicate what's happening. I mean, I would assume that's why horror films are a little more in your face and not subtle, is because you need to be broader for an audience. Is that right?
To a point. It's you've got to be – it's really hard to be subtly scary.
Yeah.
And very few filmmakers pull it off. The Orphanage, I think, is a good example of that, which is a Spanish-made film from a few years back that – it sets up something so obvious that you know exactly it's going to be coming, but the filmmaker is so deft and subtle that it still works.
Yes. I like that kind of thing.
Man, you want to talk subtle? Talk about sitting in a room for 4.5 hours just waiting for a light anomaly to zip past your eyes. That's subtle.
Well, yeah, that's not going to work in a film.
No, exactly. No, you're not going to be able to. And that's why you have the paranormal shows you do. That's why you have the Ghost Adventures guys doing the macho thing, because that plays.
Yeah.
And what we do
a 4-hour film with. Well, I'm going to blank on the name. But there was a film that was shown at MIFF a couple of years back that the whole idea, he presented it that. Okay, there's haunted house movies, and usually a haunted house movie is, we're haunted, why are we haunted? Mm-hmm. And his take on it was, the entire film was, we're haunted. It had nothing to do, it's called The Presence.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Once you've, Tom Proffs, once you've got that, the film was over. It's like, and it was really, really subtle. It played very well, but I could see where its legs are limited because the 20 minutes of the movie, which to start out with, has no dialogue. And it's extremely subtle. And so a 4-hour movie with one light anomaly.
It's not gonna happen.
But the things that the movies that actually really, really get me are the psychological. I'm a big psychological thriller, psychologically scary movie. I think that stuff, I'm from the 80s. That's when I was a teenager, and the 80s was the time when all of the horrifying slasher movies came out. And the psychological scary stuff, it's not out there as much anymore, do you think?
Well, it depends. I mean, what would you consider a good, from your point of view, what would be a good psychological thriller? Because those definitions can be really fluid.
I got to tell you, Vincent Price, The Pit and the Pendulum, really old classic movie. Mm-hmm. That movie, I haven't seen it in years. That's a really psychologically scary movie to me.
How about Vertigo or The Rear Window?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
They're out there. They're not. They're done. Something's going to be done with them, though, to modernize them a little bit. It's kind of like when Gus Van Sant said, I'm going to reshoot Psycho shot for shot, but I'm going to add in a little bit more sex and violence. I'm like, what?
Yeah,
I hate when they remake these classics.
Their whole purpose was to just do a basically a real experimental film of reshooting a master's film shot by shot, you're going to still adjust it because you have to have sex and violence in it now.
Well, and that's just it. I don't think that I don't think that The Pit and the Pendulum plays today.
It'll be tough. It's a good film, but it would not. It would. I mean, a lot of those API films would not. The Edgar Allan Poe stuff, and there was a couple of ones called Poe that were actually a Lovecraft. Anyways, the dating is tough. Hammer, I think Hammer still has some great stuff. Like I think their first Dracula film I watched like 2 or 3 years ago and thought, hey, this still works. This is still solid filmmaking.
Yeah, except they would have to have Dracula have, sparkly skin and... angst rather than ripping a person's heart out and feeding on their blood. Those are the vampires I want.
Yep. I think some of the more effective scary stuff making probably won't work on you as well. You know, like The Woman in Black or some stuff like that that's being made. But it's subtlety in the horror industry are frequent partners, but not always to where you not out there very much.
Just bedfellows.
And I got to tell you, I am a person who actually loves to have the hell scared out of me. I read the Amityville Horror upstairs alone in my bedroom when I was like 15 years old and my parents were on a trip.
I remember when I found out that they came out on Good Morning America or something like that to say they made up most of that story.
Yeah. I'm so disappointed.
I still remember hearing that because I was so devastated.
I was too.
I remember it distinctly. They asked George Lutz and he's like, well, mostly or something to that effect. I was like maybe 5 years old when I remember seeing it, but he's like, most of it's true. It's like, well, which is true and which isn't true, dude, you know?
We were married and we moved into a house.
Yeah, we had some kids and that was it.
See, and I find increasingly that it's really hard for me to find things that gave me that fear like the Amityville Horror did when I read it. Now, granted, I was 15, but I still like that. And I still like, I used to read a lot of like Stephen King and Dean Koontz, and I don't read that stuff anymore because now it just makes me roll my eyes. Sorry, Stephen King.
Well, that's part of the fun with mentioning Lovecraft again, that still can work is like, he is not there to scare you along the way. His entire story is build up, build up, build up, build up. And the last line is the payoff of creepiness.
Yeah. Edgar Allan Poe is the same way.
Yeah. And again, that's not anything that short films that can be done really well. Mm-hmm. But on a feature, it's hard. Like we had a short film at MIFF last year that'll be showing at Crypticon called A Penny Earned, which is a really nice kind of, it's a low budget thing, and you can tell a little bit, but it's got this great build up, and the whole thing is just this nice ending of creepiness. You're like,
yeah,
well done, thank you.
See, so maybe short films are where to go to look for that thing, but the problem with short films is where do you go outside of film festivals to see them?
Well, exactly. Yeah, there's you need, that's part of what you need from film festivals, I think, because there are so many being made, so many, and there's some great sites to see some great short films, but man, there's a lot to look through.
So is there like there's an independent film channel, right, on TV?
Oh yeah. IFC. There? Yeah.
Yeah. And so do they do some of the short indie films on that?
They've done that in the past. I don't know if they have a regular feature. I think Rick mentioned earlier, somebody watched a lot of the show. I watch a lot of their video releases. So I've seen the TV channel too terribly often.
Yeah, I haven't watched a lot of, I don't have time to watch a lot of TV, period. what are your all-time favorite horror films then?
Well, it feels like cheap sales of what we're Crypticon guests, but I love Hellraiser. love Hellraiser. We've got Doug Bradley, Pinhead, coming this year for Crypticon.
I'm there. I'm on a plane. I'm there.
I was going to say, my son may go with me for that.
Oh, man. He had the opportunity a few years ago at a different convention. And he's a great guy. He's a lot of fun. But I really enjoyed that one. And I don't hate all the sequels. I don't like most of them, but I've seen all of them. So there's that at least.
I just want to know what that one was all about where they were on the spacecraft. That made no sense to me whatsoever, but that's just me.
Whenever it's something in space, it's usually a bad sign unless it's alien.
Yeah.
That got a little long in the tooth after a while.
Yeah. That's another one of my favorite horror films, by the way, is Alien.
The original Alien?
Absolutely. Yeah, I'll call that. I qualify that as a horror film.
Oh, definitely. Definitely.
The Evil Dead franchise, I enjoy that a lot.
Mm-hmm.
One of the stranger ones, because you mentioned sparkly vampires earlier, and no, Twilight is not one of my favorite vampire movies.
Oh, thank God. I was ready to hang up on you.
And the conversation over. The Hunger.
Yes.
David Bowie, Susan Sarandon. That was Tony Scott's first film. Mm-hmm. And it's atmospheric and weird and uncomfortable and really cool.
And Susan Sarandon's topless in a scene.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, that was cool.
Speaking of that, there's Reanimator, which is, I don't know if I'd call that a great film, but I enjoyed the heck out of it.
Which one is that? I'm sorry.
Oh, Reanimator.
Okay.
Along the Lovecraft lines. John Carpenter's got two of my favorite films with The Thing and In the Mouth of Madness.
Did you say At the Mountains of Madness?
In the Mouth of Madness.
Oh, In the Mouth of Madness. Now, Chad did have a question about that. Are they making At the Mountains of Madness, or has that been completely canceled?
I would not call it canceled. Guillermo del Toro wants to do it, but he wants 100-some-odd million to do it. Whether they've offered him, I think, 68 million to make it. Mm-hmm. He's like, not enough.
Wow.
I'm guessing hopefully he'll come out with another huge hit here soon. He hasn't really had what you'd call a Hollywood hit in a little while.
Yeah.
So then he can just do it. Because a friend of mine from Andrew Migliori, who runs the H.P. Lovecraft Film Festival, or used to, saw the models that he designed for that, and he said it looks spectacular. And okay. He's like, I would love to see what he did with that.
So do you think that a movie has to be that big of a budget to really be a good, solid movie? The budgets for these movies amaze me.
No, I'll give Del Toro a pass just because it's almost like he does one for Hollywood, one for me. Because he does these amazing big-budget Hellboy movies, and then he goes and he makes little teeny Spanish low-budget films that are amazingly brilliant. Mm-hmm. Again, like I said before, it comes down to story. If you're telling a really good story at $200,000, mm-hmm. you're good. If you're telling a really good story at $200 million, you're good.
Right.
I think what seems to get lost with the really, really big budget ones is they're so afraid to just let the artist be the artist that it just gets, there's just too many people involved. Yeah. It's just like,
I've seen things like that with some of the big budget movies where what it starts out as and where it ends up are two completely different things. And as a writer, that would be really horrifying for me to write this beautiful little story that I put my heart and soul into it and then have it, go through the test audiences and all of the different people who think it needs different things. And, it'd probably wind up like one of the movies that my husband watches with the explosions and guys with big muscles. And
that's part of the reason I'm a huge Pixar fan. Pixar just tells phenomenal stories.
Yes, they do.
I think part of it is because they're so insular in what they're doing. They've got a huge company, but they're very specific in moving forward in the way they do things. And they just do great, great work.
Yeah. And see, and I'm with you. It's I'm very a very story driven person, probably because I am a writer. And you know, that's one of the reasons that I like movies, but I don't go see a lot of the big blockbuster movies. As a matter of fact, Rick will mention a movie and I'll say I've never seen it and his jaw drops because it's a lot of them are, I mean, just really common movies that a lot of people have seen. But yet I've seen movies like Clerks and, you know, some of the smaller, more intimate movies with just with a story or a character that you fall in love with. Or to me, that's what I want to see in a movie, not a sparkly vampire.
there's got to be somebody you can relate to. That's all there is to it with the main character.
Yeah,
I think so. And of course, Rick doesn't like sparkly vampires with dirty hair, right, Rick?
No, I don't. I want my vampires, man. I want them coming in your room at night, ripping your head off and your heart out, and feeding on your blood. Those are the kind of vampires I want to see. Not oh, I love you so much. Give me a break.
So who do you think? In film today, an actor, who do you think would make a really good vampire?
Oh, wow.
Because not Robert Pattinson.
Oh, yeah. Well, I blame that far more on the writing and directing.
Yeah.
Here's something hard to work with. Make it good.
Yeah, really.
Well, the first person that sprang to mind, I realize he already did it, was Brad Pitt.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Well, you know what? He did not.
He was a beautiful vampire.
Yeah, I mean, if you talk big name actors, God. What was the name of the guy who played Green Arrow?
No.
No.
That's the Green Hornet? That's the Green Hornet. No, the Green Arrow.
Green Arrow. I saw him in a film called Buried, which was Ryan Reynolds.
I like him. Lanthus, he's very appealing.
He did a film called Buried, which he did, I think, just before or right after Green Lantern. The entire film is him in a coffin. He's been buried alive, and the guy's put him there for a particular reason. The entire film coffin. And I'd be curious to see what he does, just because he seems a variety of things really well.
He is. He's very likable too.
Yeah.
So I think you're right. I think he would be a good vampire. So would you ever want to remake, or not remake, but take some of these classic horror characters, like you've got Frankenstein, you have Dracula, and others. Are there any that you would like to make a movie about?
Well, there's a a fun one, you know, the Rico Browning, the guy that'll be a Crypticon, who played Creature of the Black Lagoon.
Yeah.
That's a character that so little has been done with.
Yeah.
And it also ties into my love of Lovecraft with the deep ones and the underwater world and stuff like that. I think that'd be an interesting character to do something more with, because about the only thing that's been done with him is a sequel and then the 80s movie where he kind of had an appearance.
Yeah, no, I saw the original one.
Yeah.
With my 3D glasses.
Oh, the blue and red.
That's right.
Yeah, God, wow, I remember that, yeah. That was great.
You know, that actually, you're right, that'd be kind of a cool, creepy character to work with.
And there's so much more that could be done with the technology. And I by that, I don't mean making an entirely CGI character. I mean that you could take that interesting look and makeup that you can do now, and then you use CGI to enhance those things. Yeah, so, but man, he could look so cool.
Yeah, he kind of could. Yeah. Interesting. Very good. So, okay, so the film festival is coming up in October.
Yes.
Right? Yeah. And that's actually, people can find out about that by going to MI3Fs, so MIFFF.org, right?
Yes.
And then Crypticon is coming up in May over Memorial Day weekend, May 25th through 27th.
Yes.
And that is CrypticonSeattle.com. Uh-huh. And you have an IMDb page. Do you have anywhere else people can go to learn more about you?
My Twitter is DeadEric. and or just my name on Facebook.
Okay. Okay, very good. So it's actually, this has been really fascinating talking to you about all of this stuff.
It's been a lot of fun.
It has. It's a different conversation than we usually have here on Paranormal Underground Radio, and I like it.
Got to shake it up every once in a while.
That's right. So, Eric Morgrett, thank you for coming on, and I'm assuming that you will be at CryptoCon. So I'll,
oh, yeah. You'll I'll see me running all over the place.
Okay, well, I'll seek you out and say hello and introduce myself.
Ah, great.
All right, thanks. Looking forward to seeing you. So that's CryptoCon up in Seattle, guys. It's the weekend of Memorial Day, and if you go to CrypticonSeattle.com, you can learn more about it. And then, of course, MIFF, which is the International Fantastic Film Festival, that has all sorts of independent film shorts, and you have features as well, right?
Yes.
Yeah, okay, and that's October 5th through 7th. Also in Seattle at the SIFF Cinema Uptown, and that's MIFF.org. So, Eric, thank you so much for coming on. It's been a great conversation.
Thank you very much.
All right. So, Cheryl, do we need to take another break, or do we just keep going?
I will leave it up to you.
Okay. Well, I'm good. Rick, you good?
I'm good.
All right. So that was actually, I really enjoyed that. It was really nice talking about something other than ghosts and other things for a change.
Well, it was nice talking about that from more of an entertainment end and not so much, you know, reality TV, but, real fictional movies. That's what I think about that.
And somebody who has such a love and understanding of the movies, too.
Right.
To me, anybody who's passionate about what they do makes that topic very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And Eric clearly is very passionate about what he does, and he makes it interesting to talk about. So that's really cool. So, hey, we were talking before the show, and I know that I wanted to have a conversation with you, and maybe Cheryl, too, you know, if she feels like, you feel like talking on the radio, Cheryl?
Yeah, if you twist my arm.
Well, we're going to twist away.
Twist away. So you actually had this as a topic, I understand, for the roundtable last week when I was missing because I had written an editorial and sent it off to you. And it's about making money from the paranormal. And for me, I have written a book, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's brilliant, I might add.
Thank you. But I haven't reached, like, you know, the break-even point on that because the money that I spend going out and promoting it and talking about it to people and stuff, you know, usually eats up any profits from the book. I'll be quite honest. But I have written a book, and that seems to be a legitimate way where people say, okay, it's okay if you make money off the paranormal that way. Or people say, well, if you're going to be in a TV show, it's okay if you make money off the paranormal that way. But then you get into this gray area where people like maybe want to teach a ghost hunting class or teach a class about psychic development, and people start to get or lead paranormal tours. And people start to get really funny about that and say, you know, that's not okay. And I wondered what you guys thought about that.
Well, first, we had this on the agenda for last week's roundtable. We didn't get to it, unfortunately, because we just ran out of time. Because you know how everybody likes to talk.
I do.
But
especially Jeff Grunow. My God.
But
oops, sorry. Dropped something.
I think that I mean, for me, I don't really have a problem with people, you know, taking up these kind of projects and going with them. I think that there's kind of a fine line regarding being unethical and crossing that line, especially, I mean, if you're talking about investigating, let's say, a private home. If you're talking about starting a TV show or running tour groups, it's just, you know, it's just a huge topic, and it's you know, it's controversial in the field. I personally don't have problems with people doing shows or doing tours and that kind of thing. I think when it comes to investigations, charging is probably not a good idea.
No, I don't believe in her for paranormal investigation. Absolutely not.
Yeah.
But what's wrong? So, if you had something in your life that you were terribly passionate about, whatever that would be, like with our guest, it was filmmaking.
Yeah.
And I'm guessing that he makes some level of a living off of doing that. And how wonderful that he can do that, that he can take what he's passionate about and make money off of it. So why is it not okay for somebody in the paranormal?
Well,
as long as they're not, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, you know, I got dropped off there for a second. Sorry about that. So I missed some stuff. I think what it boils down to is offering you're offering a service when you do anything like, you know, writing a book or teaching a class or doing a ghost tour or whatever. That's offering a service because you don't actually have to really produce anything. Whereas when you're doing, you know, an investigation in somebody's home or in somebody's business, I don't care what anybody says. It's completely subjective. Okay.
Absolutely.
Okay. You're basically offering a public service. And I had a conversation about this with a colleague a couple weeks ago, and it was the whole idea of not charging so much for the investigation, but accepting donations.
We don't do that either, but yeah.
Right. I have a problem with the accepting the donations thing, only because it's like you're not giving to a charitable organization.
But Rick, they are, well, not everybody, but I think there's a lot of groups out there trying to help in some way, trying to figure out what's going on, maybe not offering a solution, maybe just saying, hey, this is what we think is happening. And I don't have a problem with donations after an investigation is over, because I think that maybe they can get some equipment that's better. Maybe they can go take a class and train.
Maybe they can meet their expenses for driving there.
Right, or website, because most teams have a website.
Sorry.
No, that's it. That's why I don't have a problem with donations after the fact. I mean, I don't believe in soliciting them, but I think it's okay to accept them if somebody really wants to donate to you.
Right, and that's actually what I was that was what I was building up to.
Oh, okay.
Here in Chicago, for example, our gas is at $4.35 a gallon. That's the way.
Well,
that's
more than we are in Washington.
Oh yeah, it's insane in this state, and
it's bad here too in California.
Yeah, and now when it comes to something like that, it's like, especially if you live in like say Highland Park or whatever, and I live out here in Ingleside, that's an hour drive for me. That is a humongous haul and a usage of a lot of gas. If you're going to take donations for something like that to recoup your gas expenses, that's fine.
So you're just saying not for the investigation itself.
But not for the investigation itself.
Well, and nobody should be made to feel that they need to reimburse you for your gas either.
Exactly. I mean, if somebody were to say, oh, hey, you know, let me, you know, whatever, let me give you a donation, take it. But at the same time, don't. I hear these people taking like hundreds and hundreds of dollars worth of donations. No, $20 and there's your gas. You know, that's it.
Right. Well, so you say you think teaching classes is okay.
Yeah, it's offering a service.
Right. So what if I'm teaching a ghost hunter certification course?
How can you certify anybody in something like that? Especially when there's, you know what, you can have experts in different parts of the fields. Like, you know, you're an expert EVP person, you're an expert photographer. But when it comes to matters of life and death, there's nobody who can call themselves an expert.
Right. You're right.
Really, the point of certification is to show that you have tried to educate yourself on the matters at hand. And while it may mean nothing, it may mean you're no better an investigator than the person who didn't take the class, you know, frankly. Mm-hmm. But maybe it means that you are more educated. It's just an individual experience.
So it's something that goes on your vitae, really, is what
pretty
it is.
Pretty much, yeah. Yeah, and you know, it's like that in any field, you know. They may send you off to a seminar or a conference or something, and you go to, you know, sessions to try and get more educated. I think that it's okay to charge for those kind of things because you are providing a service, like Rick said. But yeah. it's just, I think with the paranormal field, it's hard to quantify a lot of things going on, and that's where the problem comes
in. Absolutely. So. Well, I just feel that there's this double standard. Mm-hmm. And the double standard is if you're going to make a TV show or write a book,
mm-hmm.
that's okay. That's okay to make money or make a documentary. Mm-hmm. Like I say, everybody's, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's okay. You can do that. That way to make money is fine. Yet if you want to teach a class, lead a tour, that's sort of the input I've gotten from people, you know, where there was a discussion about somebody was charging $400 for a class to teach people how to be ghost hunters, and everybody was like, oh, well, you know, $400, frankly, is really effing steep in my book.
Yeah,
I wouldn't pay that. But if you and I are talking and I perceive that you have knowledge and that knowledge has a value to me, and I feel that value is $400, mm-hmm. and I want to pay you $400, Rick, to get that mm-hmm. the benefit of your knowledge, that's between you and me.
Right. But you see, now that's the thing that I did want to say is I would pay $400 to sit in a class or a series of classes given by Lloyd Auerbach or Neil McNeil.
Too. Yeah, me too.
Or anybody who is a real parapsychologist, okay? Mm-hmm.
Oh, Barry Taff. Yeah.
Okay. Or even Barry Taff. I love Barry Taff. I think he's like the coolest guy in the world. But I would pay that kind of money for them. I am not going to pay money for Joe Blow Ghost Hunter. You know what I'm saying?
No, somebody else might.
But that's the thing. It's like, what kind of an education are you getting there? Are you getting an education that they have, like, you know, that PhD or that master's degree behind it? Are you getting an education from somebody who has 30, 40, 50 plus years in the field? Or are you going to get an education from somebody who has only been doing this for 5 or 6 years and considers himself an expert? I've come across these kind of people before. I'm not paying them nothing for their...
No, but what if you don't want to pay them, but I perceive that there's value in that, and so I do? That's the point, is that if one person perceives there's value in something else that another person has to offer them,
mm-hmm.
then that's between them. Well, I don't think that outside people should be saying, don't do that.
Okay, but that's what I'm saying. I wouldn't...
Excuse me.
You know what I'm saying? I wouldn't pay that. Right. Now, if somebody else wants to pay that, like you said, that's fine.
Yep.
So, but that's me. I mean, I think it's a level of, like, you have to be able to discern what it is that you're listening to and what it is, you know, the kind of education that you're giving or you're getting from this person.
Well, sure. I mean, there's a sucker born every minute, and there are going to be people who are going to pay for things no matter what. But okay, let's look at psychics who charge. Now, again, the value, Sylvia Brown charges something like, I mean, over $1,000, I think, for a session, for instance. And, you know, or you could call the Psychic Friends Network. I can't even say that without laughing.
Without laughing. Yeah, I can't say it with a straight face.
Cleo. What was her name?
Wasn't it Cleo?
You know, and pay
Mom, call me now.
Yeah, you can pay like $25 an hour and, you know, and get drivel. But then who's to say that Sylvia Brown at her $1,200 level is any more authentic? And I don't know. I don't know anything about the authenticity of Sylvia Brown. But, you know, but that she's any more authentic either. So you have this whole range of what psychics charge. And there are some real charlatans out there that are charging big bucks.
Well, that's exactly why we have this present ideology in the field right now, that we don't want to work with psychics because all psychics are, you know, they're going to take your money and they're shysters or you know, whatever. That's not the case. I mean, you have real, like Robin Marie, for example, or the medium that I work with, Nancy Laporta. Mm-hmm. Nancy will do readings. She will do private readings, and she will do readings in a couple of metaphysical stores that she works in. Now, again, you're offering that service. You're in that store. You're in that private home. But if that psychic medium is out there or taking part in an investigation, I think that that's where the line gets drawn. Don't accept money for that. But if you're actually offering the service, although it's incredibly subjective, we all know that. I know the argument, but still, you're still offering a service to somebody at that point.
Right. Right. I agree. I absolutely agree. So what do you think, Cheryl?
I'm sorry. I was looking at the chat room. There was some excitement going on in there. Tell me the question again.
We were just talking about, you know, like psychics and people.
Sylvia Brown. And- okay. Yeah, I have no problem whatsoever with psychics charging for their services. And I don't have a problem with how much they charge. I think it's up to the individual to become educated on the person that they're going to acquire the services from. And if they see value in it, then that's totally up to them.
See, there you go. That's yeah. it. It's the perceived value. If, you know, if I want to buy a rock from you for $5,000 because I perceive that rock has some value,
mm-hmm.
I may be stupid.
but it's your choice.
But it's your my choice. Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. Right. So, hey, guys, anything else you want to talk about? Cheryl, anything we need to mention, bring up? What do we have next week? You know, all that?
Well, yeah, we have, pull this up here. We have, next week, we're going to have a guest coming back that we've had on before, and his name is Stephen David Lancaster II. He joined us, oh gosh, it was, I'm sure it was last year sometime, but we had a great conversation with him about paranormal research and theories and all that kind of thing. So we'll be touching base with him on what he's been up to, his new projects.
And Rick hung up on us.
How dare he?
I know.
How dare Rick? Yeah. So we have that
Sorry
coming
about that,
up.
Guys.
You hung up on us, dude.
That was it. You know what? I meant to hit
mute. I do that
because I had to cough.
I've
and
done
I hit
that before. Yeah, I've done that before. Okay. So I remember the name Stephen David Lancaster, but I don't remember the specific show. So I'll have to.
Yeah, and you know what? I wish I could remember the date that we talked to him, but I'm pretty sure it was last year at some point. Do you remember Rick? Right.
Yeah, I just, you know, remember him being like really a really cool cat and yeah. Monster Vision. I love the name of it, but I don't remember
what Monster Vision. Was.
Monster Vision, yeah, and it's not Joe Bob Briggs, you know, like some people
yeah,
might.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay, I remember. All right.
It's all coming
yeah,
back
I liked
now.
Him. Awesome. Yeah. Thanks. I was worried you brought back a dead. No, I'm kidding.
No.
Gaster.
And that will be on April 5th. The following week on April 12th, we're going to be actually playing a pre-recorded interview that Chad and I taped yesterday.
The one I backed out on you because I accidentally agreed to chaperone 80 high
one.
School students.
Yeah,
and
that
yeah,
one.
And I think, yeah, there was a miscommunication.
I should have stuck around and done the fucking interview, I'm telling you. Anyway,
So we actually spoke with Paul Green, who is known as the Psychic Biker, and Stephen Lambert, who is known as the Extreme Ghost Hunter. They are based in the UK, and they investigate. They host paranormal ghost tours, and their group is called Extreme Ghost Hunting. They have done a pilot episode about one of their investigations. They do a lot in the field. They're kind of non-traditional. They do not use a whole lot of equipment.
Do they scream at ghosts?
I don't believe they scream at ghosts. I don't believe they do. But
was it a good interview because you did it?
Yeah, well, it's probably not as good as if you and Rick had done it. But I think we hung in there, and they were so cool. I'll just tell you that they were just refreshing. They've also just published a book, and I think it's called The Psychic Biker Meets the Extreme Ghost Hunter or something like that. And we also talked about that. We talked about so many different things.
No, sorry.
Oh my God, did you just yawn?
I was yawning as I said it. The Psychic Biker Meets the Extreme Ghost Hunter.
Yeah.
And the subtitle is A Love Story.
Yeah. Well, I read a few chapters of it so far that they sent over, but I haven't read the whole thing. But based on the Amazon reviews, I plan to finish reading it. So, but it was really, yeah, a really good conversation. I was glad we were able to make it work. And
I apologize. I'm sorry I missed it. I would have rather been there than on the bus with 80 high school students.
Mm. Well, yeah. I really hope we have them back on again at some time in the future because it just...
When Rick and I are available.
When you guys are available, we had so much more to talk about. And,
great. Good, I'll look forward to listening to that.
Yeah. So we have a lot coming up. We're going to get a new magazine, a new issue of Paranormal Underground magazine online, hopefully. hopefully in about 2 weeks, and that
that's
will
right.
be
and
our.
It's bimonthly. Okay. Now.
It's bimonthly, no. six yes. times a year. The next issue is our March-April issue. So,
I believe I did some writing for it.
Yes, yes, you did.
Do I
did.
Have anything in it?
Probably.
Oh, okay. I actually don't remember right now.
But...
and some of my editorializing.
Yes,
sending,
lots of editorials.
I keep getting mad at
from
somebody
Karen.
And sending Cheryl an editorial.
Hey, it makes it exciting.
I have a platform. Oh, that's right. Every time Cheryl gets something from me that says editorial, she thinks, oh, God, who pissed Karen off this time?
Let me just throw out some more names of upcoming guests.
We
have Nick Corey coming up on April 19th. He is a paranormal investigator. I also believe he's a psychic medium, and I can't remember his exact abilities, but he's going to be talking with us about some of his research and investigations.
Okay.
And I'm putting Karen to sleep. I just know it.
I can't stop yawning. No, I think it's... You would not believe the week I've... I am exhausted.
I understand.
Yeah, I get that.
Oh, that's Cheryl. Rick and our guest were exciting, but Cheryl...
yeah. It just takes me to come on here and put everyone to sleep. I know. Okay, let me finish my list. We have Neil McNeil. You guys remember him from
Neil's
a few months ago.
Back.
He's coming
Love
back.
Neil McNeil.
He's a I get to
researcher
see him in 2 weeks, too.
And an educator.
Nice.
He's
yeah.
on April 26th. The week after that, we have an author coming on. He's the author of The Ghost Way. His name is Kung Smith.
The Ghost what?
The Ghost Way.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's and then we have another so. Author coming up the week after, Roberta DiCaprio, author of Altered Journey.
Wait, any relation to Leonardo?
Well, you know, I didn't ask, but it's possible.
That'll be our question for.
We have Jackie Klieb coming on the week after, and she's with a group, I believe it's called Paranormal Phenomenon Investigators. Mike Roberts, Rick set this one up with Demented Media, is coming on the week after. We're now up to May 31st.
Cool. Love the name.
And then June 7th, we have Rochelle Wright. We actually had her booked a couple months ago, and we had to actually reschedule, but she's coming on June 7th.
So is that a strange, exotic journey from Milan to Minsk? Rochelle, Seinfeld thing, sorry. Please.
Okay, proceed. I totally missed that one. She does something a little unusual. She's a licensed mental health professional who does a therapy called Guided Afterlife Connections.
Yeah.
And I think that'll be really interesting. So.
Yeah, and actually what would be really awesome if one of the people that she's worked with would come on with her. And I happen to know one of the people she's worked with, so let me see if I can...
do it.
That
makes total sense, Karen. I also wanted to ask...
Yeah, in spite of my boredom, I'm still on. Go
oh,
on.
Good. I'm in the chat room. JoJo's spirit talker says she's wide awake. Thank you, okay. JoJo. I feel
just
better.
We
have a new show after us on Z-Talk
oh,
Radio. Yes, starting tonight. It is called Fox City's Paranormal. And they will be on every Thursday after our show, Paranormal Underground Radio. Okay. And tonight...
Give it you guys an awesome lead-in. Don't blow it.
Tonight, they are going to have a guest on. His name is Justin Villarreal. He's from LCGH Research Group. And, you know, I'm sure they're going to have a great show Thursday night. It's a full lineup now with Paravisions. Paranormal Underground Radio, and now Fox City's Paranormal.
Big things happen on the big ztalkradio.com, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh,
big
yeah.
Stuff.
So, other than that, there's a lot going on. But, yay, we're excited about it. If anybody has guest ideas for us, just please email editor@paranormalunderground.net. We're always looking for people to talk to, and we're always looking for a wide variety of guests. They don't necessarily have to, you know, be a paranormal researcher.
No,
they
could
be
tonight.
Yeah, into
great.
Cryptids
filmmaker.
Or UFOs
yeah.
or horror filmmaking, whatever, whatever we're open, afterlife, you know, whatever it is. So
yeah, I know, definitely. We haven't had a reincarnation show in a while. That's what we need. Since we talked to Jeff Keane, we need to find some big, awesome reincarnation. My ideal guest would be Michael Newton or Brian Weiss. But
okay, I'll have to tell you, I know I definitely have invited Dr. Weiss, Dr. Brian Weiss. I did not get a response. That was some time ago, though.
I also invited him through a mutual friend and got no response.
Yeah, so we're trying. Because Dr. Weiss's book, what was
That's
it?
Right.
Karen, what was it? Was it Many Lives, Many Masters? What was that book called by Dr. Weiss?
Yeah, Many Lives, Many Masters. Yeah.
That was like one, a very influential book for me regarding reincarnation, and I've always wanted to talk to him. I think that would be awesome if we could keep trying.
Yeah, so. And same thing with Michael Newton.
But yeah,
man, you can't get that guy. But you know who we might be? I actually know somebody else who we might be able to get who does the Life Between Lives stuff, because that Life Between Lives stuff that we were talking about at the start of the show is awesome. It's amazing. That's all I can say.
It really is.
Well, so you know, I see my husband putting on his shoes, which means he wants to go eat dinner.
It's time to eat. All right. Yeah. Well,
that's usually what that means.
I know. And my dogs have been really good, given that I've been sitting in the living room, and they've only barked a couple times. So, you know, I think we did well. I think we did well tonight. And
it was
a great guest.
Interesting.
Great conversation.
Thanks, Eric.
Thank you.
You know, a big thanks to Eric. He was great. And Karen, you're going to go to the conference. I wish I could go. I can't, but you have to tell us all about it. Especially your discussion, your panel. That's going to be awesome.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, well, my husband's standing here talking to me. It's like he doesn't realize I'm on the radio, so he doesn't care.
Chad does that all the time.
No, I have headphones on. I see his lips moving. He's waving a drill bit at me. I'm not sure what it means.
You better go.
But, if I am murdered by a drill bit...
We'll know by who.
We'll check in on you.
All right, you do that. All right, so... Okay, that sounds like a good plan. So next week, we'll be back then. Looking forward to it. Paranormal Underground Radio on Z-Talk Radio. That's going to be 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern, and other times in the flyover states. Until next week, thanks for listening, everybody. Good night.
Night.
If you'd like to be a guest on Paranormal Underground Radio, email editor@paranormalunderground.net. Until next week, keep exploring the unexplained at www.paranormalunderground.net and join us again next week for Paranormal Underground Radio on the Z-Talk Radio Network.
Something in your mind you cannot hide. You can try everything, you'll be high in the end. There's something on your cheek that's flowing like a creek. Are there tears, or just dying memories? Keep doing what you do. You are the stolen thief. Keep seeing what you say, but remember that everywhere you'll be the stolen thief. You'll be the stolen thief. You'll be the stolen thief. You'll be the stolen thief, my friend. Maybe you think the people would fall into your traps, but look better around you, there's nothing but your lies. You're lost in your own mind with that like no compass. You can try to pinch yourself and wake up fast. Keep doing what you do, but be my butt out anyway. You are the stolen thief. Keep saying what you say, but be my butt out everywhere. You'll be the stolen thief. My friend.